Welcome, Gunslingers, to another episode of Narrative Gunslingers, where we talk about stuff. Okay.
What? Yeah. Talk about stuff. Travis. Travis. What stuff are we going to talk about today?
We literally have a script in front of me, and I can't get it right. Okay.
You have a script. I have a script. Do you want to start over again?
No, let's just jump in and talk about who today's guest is. Greg?
Today's guest? Oh, Travis, you're going to be amazed by this. This is going to be so great. Today's guest is going to be none other than... Drumroll, please. Are you ready? Are you ready? It's going to be you and me. That's right. Travis Webb, Greg Smith, the guest, host guest of Narrative Gunslingers.
You know,
talking to you today.
I'm just going to say it right now, if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, that this is probably one worth skipping. Just hit skip.
Hit skip? Why would they want to hit skip on something so golden? This is going to be a banner podcast. And by banner, I mean one that you just look at the banner and you skip on by. Oh my gosh, I'm doing it too, Travis. Oh, you gave me the skippies.
Okay, this is a dear one listener that we have. We're sorry.
We are so sorry. Now, things unavoidable happened today, and our scheduled guest could not make it. That's okay. We are currently rescheduling their appearance with us, but no fear, folks, no fear, because today, as I said, we are going to talk to you about us. We kind of talk a little bit about things that Travis and I have done, do, and things that we work on. A little bit with our guest, but this is kind of a nice little break from that, where we get to kind of talk to each other and talk about what's going on, what we got planned in the upcoming weeks, months. For you out there listening, I think if you know us, this is going to be exciting stuff.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah, we could
right,
talk
Travis?
A little bit about how we got into comic books. We could talk a little bit about what we do outside of comics. We could talk a little bit about what inspires us. We got lots of topics.
So many topics. So many things to talk about. It's what?
Narcissist episode.
The narcissist episode. Oh. No, I don't know. I wouldn't call it that. I would just say it's just off... A little off-brand, but maybe a little rebalance, if you will. Maybe a round robin discussion that maybe we need to have.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes.
I'm yawning on the show. We should cut that later.
I don't know if I can. This is real life, man. This is real life. Real things happen. This is the behind the curtain of the Narrative Gunslingers. You're getting. A little bit, a peek behind the curtain of what the wizards do when they're whizzing. Wait, that's not right
that
either.
Very good. But yeah. You tripped over that one. Well, here's what I'm proposing.
All right, you propose it, and I will see if I want to marry it.
We interview each other each for 1.5 hour. What do you think?
Okay. All right.
So we should decide who goes first as the interviewer. Person doing the interviewer, not the interview.
All right, so we'll play rock, paper, scissors, and on count of three, 1, 2, 3, go. Mm-hmm. I got rock.
Yep.
What do you got? This is great radio right here. This is great podcasting.
Wait, oh.
You got paper, so that beats rocks. That means you go first. You get to interview.
You?
Or you get to choose.
All right, here we go. I'm just going to interview. Well, Greg.
Okay, all right.
Masterful writer.
Yeah.
Master of stories. You know, Wordsmith. And that should be like your last name, Greg Wordsmith.
Yeah. My moniker on the Twitters is GK Wordsmith.
Oh my gosh, that's so. Where I got it from. Dang it. I knew I wasn't that damn creative. All right.
my initials and my last name. Yes.
Greg, first, let's start. What got you?
Yes.
What brought you to comics?
What brought me to comics? What brought me to comics? Well, I guess, I mean, like most young kids, they find those comic books.
I'm trademarking that first question, so you can't use it without paying me. Go forward now.
Trademarking the question, so I have to use it without. I can't use it unless I pay you. Oh my gosh, this is tough.
You got a half hour.
Are you gonna start trademarking every single question?
No, that's kind of how.
And then I'm gonna have to pay you. That's terrible. I dislike it so much.
Unfortunate, but it's a reality.
But it's so true. Yeah. It's a reality. Oh my gosh.
Bring us back to
comics. So let's see. Yeah. What I get, like, I guess for clarity's sake, do you want to know what got me into comics, or how I got into comics? Does that make sense?
What got you into comics? Not as a profession, just as a medium that you love.
Just as a medium that I love. Like most kids,
staring at the store, little runny nose pressed against the window, looking at a magazine rack at a 7-Eleven on a rainy day. You watch the rich kid turn and saw all the $1.75 Spider-Mans go by, and then you saw that Malibu comic for the first time. Nobody ever saw a Malibu comic and wanted it. I'm sorry about the comments. Okay, moving forward. Go ahead, Greg.
No, it wasn't even. I wish it was that exciting. It really wasn't. It was my parents realizing that I had a very bad aptitude for reading, mainly because I was dyslexic and slightly more diagnosed at a later age than I probably should have been. And my dad realized that I could put stories together through pictures better than I could with reading the actual books that were put in front of me by teachers. So anytime a book was given to us in class, my dad would hustle down to the comic book store, knowing that there was usually like a key book or something like that that was done in a comic book format of some sort. So if the class was reading Robinson Crusoe or Call of the Wild, gosh darn it, he was quick to go get me Robinson Crusoe or Call of the Wild in comic book form so I could look at all the pictures and get the story and get that kind of understanding and better grasp on the what we were supposed to be reading and stuff. And from that point on, I really started to enjoy comics and was like, oh, are there more? And he was like, oh yeah, there's a lot more. And I would go and start to dig around and go to comic book shops. And we went to a ton of different, like those like old gymnasium comic book meets and stuff of yore. And you would go in there and there'd be just like long boxes, just jam packed with old books, just dusty and musty, and just digging through. And just, I'd walk out feeling like a king with my $2 and just buying up all these like old Richie Riches that were just beat up or whatever, you know? So, a lot of that stuff, I think, like, as a kid, I was always reading like G.I. Joe books or, Howard the Duck books. 'Cause Howard the Duck was one of those comic book series that, my uncles read. So they had a majority of them. And when I got to a certain age, I think I compiled almost every single issue. I have pretty much like everything minus two issues in the collection. So, and it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like I have to have them all. I just like them. I like them. They're fun read and they're good. You know, they're fun. But, that's kind of what got me into reading comics and stuff like that. I did hang out at the 7-Eleven with the spinner rack. There wasn't a comic book store in the town that I moved to for quite some time, and that was the closest thing we had. So spinner rack comics were generally what was at my disposal. So usually I was reading everything like a year after everything was out, unless somehow I got a trip to a real comic book store, and then I'd get to get something new, real new. But generally speaking, I wasn't really like the new comic book reader because I couldn't afford new comics. So I was usually the 25 cent or less comic book buyer, and the kid that was using the comic book store as a library more so than a place to buy books.
Oh, you were that kid.
I was that kid, man.
Holes
in my pants and everything.
That kid. So after you got into comics, what made you want to write comic books?
What made me want to write comic books? Actually, as a kid, I wanted to write kids' books, and I wanted to actually write like, I'd say like all sorts of fun books that kids would want to read, because that's what I, when I started to read books and the kinds of books that I read when I was even like a young adult, adolescent, or even like a teenager and stuff like that. I liked fun books that made me want to read. And that's the kind of stuff that I want to write. And I was like, oh man, that's what I really want to write. And I was like, man, that would be like the best thing, is to be able to like write stuff for kids that like that kind of thing. And comic books weren't really something that I had even thought about, because honestly, I thought, oh, you got to do all this other stuff to do comics. Like you have to like know art, and you have to be an artist, and you have to understand all these other things. And I didn't make the connection in the process. Does that make sense? Like that you could write and you could write comics. And it was one of those things, like even in school, like when I went to school, I was going to school to write books. I was going to school to write actual prose and other things like that, because and screenplays, because I thought that's what the teachers were telling me that I needed to focus on and do. And they never at any point did anyone say that you could translate it over, or you could take the knowledge that you're learning from one aspect and one genre and move it into something else. And I felt like, man, this is really difficult in a sense, right? Because you're feeling like you're getting all this knowledge, but you're not being able to utilize it in different ways. And I felt like I was continually chasing different things through my education. And I was like at a point I was kind of frustrated, but it was one of those like, okay, well, something's gotta come around at some point, right? And while I was working on various things and just, you know, writing up stuff, I wrote a lot of screenplays and wrote a lot of stuff with my buddy Mike Tanner, who I actually do write comics with. And the irony is a majority of our conversations while we were in writing classes to learn writing for stage, prose, and TV and film was just centered around us hanging out, playing video games, and talking about comic books and going to comic book stores and wrestling shows and other stuff like that. And watching terrible movies and other things, you know, like just like B grade stuff, and just being like, wow, how do you do this over here? This is what we like to do. How do you do that? And it was one of those things where it's like, we never made the connection at a point. And then all of a sudden, the weirdest of things happens is all the blocks kind of fall into place. I was having this conversation with our buddy Dan the other day that, like, you to get into any kind of thing or do anything creatively, there's like three things that you need, right? And it's you need to have the drive to do it, the talent slash skill to be able to be noticed, and or the luck, right? And I feel like we had been working so much, we had the drive and we had been working on the skill and all that talent aspect and trying to chase all those different things and figuring out how all the pieces fit together, like a giant game of Tetris or Jenga, and making sure either like building it up and or not making it fall down, right? And deleting the lines in this big game of Tetris. And then finally, like, everything kind of like locks in and you're like, oh, you can take all this information that you have and put it into something else because it does all kind of work together. I don't know. It was a weird kind of epiphany because I want to say, like, it was, I don't know. I'm at a loss, Travis, because I've told this story before, and it's such a weird situation. So for those who don't know, I was a professional clown, and I'll back up a bit. So Mike Tanner, who I write Junior Braves of the Apocalypse with, he and I before that were writing partners from college, and we had written a few screenplays and put them into competitions at Slam Dance, Fox Searchlight, and other things like that. This is pre-writer strike, circa early 2000s. And we had gotten that blessing, right? So we'd been brought down as semifinalists, brought into some things, and got to meet people, producers, directors, and other stuff like that for our screenwriting talent, which was really cool. And just when we felt like we were making connections, that's when the Screenwriters Guild went on strike. And basically we watched everything just dissolve in front of us. It was like going to a party in high school and all of a sudden the parents showing up and you're in the back of the house and somebody's flicking the lights on and off up in the front and telling everyone to get out, get out, get out, because you got to go. And when you circle back, everybody's gone and there's nowhere to go again. Because when we came back, everybody had moved on. They'd gone off to video games. They'd gone off to other things. And it was kind of like, okay, well, I guess this is life. So Mike went off to go do his thing, and he found a really cool hobby working in roller derby. And I went off to be a professional clown. And I was doing kids' birthday parties during the day, burlesque at night, doing DJing and stuff like that. So I was just throwing myself into all this other fun stuff. And we were both like having, you know, living in that, like, that okay, this is our next phase of whatever. And then the stilt accident happens and I basically break myself. I rupture some disc in my back, compress my spine, mess up myself real good. I'm laid up for a while, about a year, waiting for a surgery. And again, this like dates it because it's like so early in the internet that there really isn't social media like we have now. So I'm doing everything over text message, messaging people or like texting people late at night because I'm on like all sorts of painkillers and stuff like that. And just like any kind of weird idea that's coming to my head, I'm shooting off to Mike, and I'm telling him all these like random pitch ideas. And all of a sudden a message comes back and he's like, tell me more. So I just keep going and telling him this story and telling him and just keep texting him this story and just keep writing the story via text message. And like, it goes on for like, I don't know, like probably an hour of just me and him texting back and forth. So he and I are texting back and forth. And the next morning I wake up and he's like, I think we're writing a comic book. And I was like, what? And I was like, this is something you decided? And he's like, no, like the guy I was in a car with is leaving Hollywood to go work at Oni Press. And he's an editor and he wants us to write that as a comic book. So I the idea was the Scouts in the Apocalypse. And that's where the genesis of Junior Braves came from, was a crazy night of me being laid up on pain meds and texting my buddy all about this crazy idea. And then it just turned into a comic book series, a graphic novel series for kids. So I essentially ended up doing exactly what I wanted to do when I was a kid, which is write books for kids that would be fun and interesting. I just didn't realize that I would get there eventually and I would be writing in the style that I enjoyed when I was a kid. I thought that I had to write a book. And it all because of weird hobbies and fun things that we did that ended up, you know, he was and the car ride, he was going to RollerCon and he happened to be a derby judge. And the guy he was sharing the car with was the photographer and they were going to go do a big derby event. So it was just one of those happy accidents of all those things, like luck. Right. So we had the skill, we had the drive and the luck all just like happened. And that's how I ended up in comics.
I'm so sorry. I started laughing and I muted. I had it mute because I have a Frenchie now and he started barking right here, getting to the end of your story. I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, I gotta keep it muted. And then you get your climax. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's a great, oh crap. I'm a mute.
Epic.
Oh, it's a good paramount to your story. So
it's real life.
Yeah, it's real life. So, I mean, let me ask you. I'm gonna try to ask from the audience perspective. Do you think you're going to continue with the medium of comics going forward after Junior Braves and Starlight?
Yeah, actually, it's surprising how one thing opens a door for something else and opens another door for something else. Like without Junior Braves, I wouldn't be at a convention sitting literally tables away from you and Brett and having, some friends come over and tell me that I needed to come over and talk to you guys. And there, there's that. And it just kind of like that opens the door. Junior Braves opens another door, where I'm making, role-playing games for kids and then making like basically opening another door for something that I want to talk about, but I can't because NDAs are awesome. But, it's going to be, it's also in the same vein. So, in kid stuff. So
that's amazing.
Oh man. And it's one of those things where it's like, if the Jenga pieces didn't topple the way they did, or the Tetris build didn't build and I didn't get the long piece to go down the side and, unlock the, Tetris after Tetris, over time, it definitely takes time. It's not an instantaneous thing, right? Definitely one of those things that takes some time, but you find that all these things kind of work to make things happen and you make these connections with people and all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, this is something that I want to do. And would you be interested in it? And people are like, oh yeah, you did this other thing and you're doing this other thing. That's also really cool. And I'm following these two things that you're doing. And I think that this thing that you're talking about would be really cool. So
I tell it to people all the time. The main way to get to do what you want to do is to find a way to find the opportunity to present themselves, and that's why if you live in a small town, you're never going to be a famous actor until you get out of that small town, because there's no opportunities in a small town to make you a famous actor.
It's true.
The people like, don't exist there that that can open those doors.
Right. You're not going to be able to get those doors open. You're not going to get your opportunity. You can try to make the opportunities for yourself, but until you're swimming in those deeper waters, you're never going to know how hard you can actually paddle.
Yep.
And you know, the current's tough, but if you're willing to dig deep into it, you can get out a lot farther than you thought you could.
All right. Tougher questions, sir, since we're together on this. What's it been like
working
on Starlight with me? And you can be frank because it's for the audience, not for me. You don't have to kiss my ass.
I will tell you, like, in some ways, it's super intimidating. In some ways, it drives me crazy. In some ways, I'm working with one of my best friends, so how could it be bad? But I think that's like, it's, I think that like intimidating because when, for those who don't know, the phone call when you told me about Starlight was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. That's amazing. And then I was like, I can't wait to read this idea that you got cooking. And then when you and Brett asked me to come on, I was like, wait, you're the fixer. You fix things. You want me to help you. That's that to me, that was intimidating. And then, you know, like, obviously, like, I think because we're friends, we've got a lot of, there's a lot of, and it's such a weird thing too, cause we've been around each other so long in various other things that it's, I don't know. It's such a weird, our lives have circled each other, but, I would say sometimes it's like we think so similarly, but so differently. And that's what I think drives me crazy. Sometimes it's like, some days I'm just like, oh man, dude, come on. And some days I'm like, oh dude, you totally beat me to the idea, you know? So, it's a fun thing. And I'm just happy to be able to do it and work on a project with one of my good friends, because that's, I think in anything that you do, you want to be able to do things that you enjoy doing and make that your job and make that something that you do and you enjoy, but you also want to do that with people you enjoy doing that stuff with. So, being able to share that with your friends is like the best feeling.
All right. So final question. Because it's trying to be 30 minutes each.
All right.
I will be quiet. I will not make excuses because it's about, this show's about us, right? So we'll be the I don't know, narcissist episode. All right. Good or bad, favorite story of you and I working together from your perspective. And you can tell me things that I may not know. I'm going to be okay. And if you ask me the same question, I will do the same thing to you. But I just... working together, Travis and Greg story. Go.
Working together, Travis and Greg story. Oh my gosh. There's too many. Fringy. There's too many good stories. Real life. There's a fringy in the room. Too many good stories as to like us working together on Starlight. But I would say my favorite one is it has to be the one where you and I went to coffee that first time and you handed me what looked like the Unabomber's like manifesto, just a stack of papers. And you were like, you gotta read this. And I'm not going to let you go until you read it all. And I started reading all this stuff that you'd written, and you've been writing it for like, I don't know, it had to have been like a year since you guys had got back from the Burning Man trip. Right. So it had been a while. And It was the first draft of Starlight, and I got to a point and I looked up and you're like, you're there. And I was just like, I think like everything had left my body at that point, and I was a shell. I was a husk, and I was like, I don't think I could form words because I was so I was into the story, the moment, the characters, everything. And I think it was at that point where I was like, I really want to work on this, but I don't want to be the guy that asks, can I work on this thing? And then it was like literally like a month later you asked, but I think like that day was the day where I was just like, oh my God, I love this right here. And I think you like I hit that moment in the story where like everything just poof.
I think that's what happens now. But I do remember that moment because I was watching you knowing you were getting to that point in the story. And I was, there's a lot of technique in crafting up to that period in the story, which we have to be very careful about talking about in the book. And I was worried because I was using some crafting. I felt like I was punching above my weight on that point. And I don't think we've changed it much since then. In fact, I think we've made it
because there's. Yeah, I think you and I working on it, and then also having young David come in and help us with his young eyes. It's actually kind of nice to have somebody with a different perspective and to take a look at it. But I mean, you and I, after being so closely tied to the project and idea, but it's one of those things where looking at that it. Yeah, there's not much that needs to change. It's such a good, solid moment.
Yeah. I do remember that moment because I saw you look up at me and I was like, you just read that one part and you're like, oh my God. And I was like, oh God, it worked. You were the first person I showed that part to.
I think I was good.
Even before Brett, I showed that to you and I was like, oh God, thank God that worked.
I almost wanted to get up and leave because I was like, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. I don't know why you're even having me read this. Why do you want me to read this? I don't know what else I can tell you.
That's awesome. I'm glad that's a really good story. I was worried it was going to be one of the ones where I'm crazy drunk and you guys are like directing me towards the other way to get me to stop talking to people, which is the traditional Travis adventure story, or as Brett says,
oh no. Well, I would
green room wasted giving lessons on writing to other writers.
I would say my favorite Travis story is us coming back from the Italian restaurant in San Diego, and we're hoofing it back to get back to industry parties, and you just stop. And there's like, I mean, we had a mob of people with us. It was like six of us. And you're like, guys, stop. I had to take this phone call. And we're like, what? And it was like right before taking off. And it was when you sold the hate on
them. Sold it to the people.
Oh, shit. And you were like, oh, my God. This is going to fund everything for a while. And you just like, it was one of those like crazy moments of like, yep, this is what life with Travis is like. And I could see like three of the people that we were with not knowing what was going on. And Mike and I were just like, yep, this is a normal night with Travis.
Money. Yeah. We should probably beep
it was great.
IP branding of that part, but you could leave the story in. So definitely be
okay,
the two brands that I just listed out. But yeah. That was a good time.
I will.
Oh man.
Yeah, I was so full because I tried to eat that whole salad. Oh my God.
Yeah. And
what was I thinking?
And then I had that lasagna in my hotel fridge that I actually brought back to Seattle for next con.
What? Yeah. Dude. So gonna bring it. Why?
Because I was going to keep his salad. Because I mean, for his lasagna. That way, you know, because he left it with me.
It was a good lasagna.
What is that place called?
We've eaten there every year we've gone.
In Little Italy.
And we've gone together, and I can't remember its name. I just know it's the Italian restaurant down in Little Italy.
About a mile from
and we go. We've gone like how many? Dude, it's been a lot of years now.
Awesome, dude. Okay, man. 36, or sorry, it'd be about 30 minute mark now.
Okay. All right. So I can't ask you how you got into the thing. You can ask me whatever. You can even ask me. But No. I don't want to pay you any money.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not
cheap.
Beep that one out.
beep, beep. So, when you... What did you like to read as a child?
Robotech.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
Interesting.
Yeah, I read a lot of Robotech growing up. Yeah. Read a lot of ElfQuest and Robotech. That was probably the most dominant two books series in my life as a kid. It's such a weird thing, because I did read everything that everybody else read, too, don't get me wrong, right? But, like, I was just really invested in Robotech and in the ElfQuest for years. I think that's, the thing is, I was thinking about this earlier, and a lot of the comics will come out, and they're basically the same story that's the current trope that everyone thinks that a comic is. You know, an example of this is, and this includes myself, but like, how many times have we seen a group of teenagers living in a mansion together who are a superhero team with a father figure who is either disabled or slightly off kilter? Right? Like, we know that story, you know, and people, well, that's what a comic book is. Well, at the same time, like when Archie's comic books were coming out, there were a whole bunch of other Archie people understand that there was Marvel was making Archie style comic books for a while. That's where what's her name Cat came from and stuff. And romance comics, and that's what comic books were, you know. And and that's great. I can usually handle one, you know, but then I'll read something else. I'm like, oh man, that's just the same thing, right? Like I've read Superman,
right?
You know, I know Superman. Even in the modern comic book era that we have right now, with superheroes being everywhere, there's in the films we're seeing 40-year-old, 30-year-old, and 20-year-old comic book characters of that era coming to film, and they're doing it well. I'm not going to say they're not, but in comic books themselves, we have a huge movement of stories, and they're starting to come out in film of you know, all the things we loved about comics, but what if they were more realistic and gritty and there was all this backstabbing and betrayal between the Justice League members, right? And, you know, that's, you know, and that's something we're seeing over and over and over again. And, you know, that's great. I can handle the first Watchmen. The Frenchie loves it. I can handle the first Watchmen. You know, I can handle a couple more. I can handle a little bit of The Boys as a TV series. But, like, when everything is that, it's not that interesting anymore, you know. And it starts getting really tropey. Like, I know that, you know, oh, no, what if Superman suddenly, you know, with all his superpower decided to be evil or decided to betray the group? Got it, you know. And even when I was a kid, I kind of had issues with that. It just bored me. And so I think I ended up reading stuff like, you know, I would go and look at other comics that were not that. You know, I read a comic book series from the UK Marvel label that was called Dark Angel. I read, so many weird series. I read a whole bunch of war comics for a long time from DC. Because I just had them. I read a ton of Archie's. Just anything that wasn't X-Men or DC superheroes, to be honest, when I was younger. And part of it was, I was not interested in reading the same stories over and over again. Now, I openly admitted I have an allergy against Alpha Flight, so there's that. But, I forgot where I was going.
You have an allergy to Alpha Flight?
Yeah, I have definitely an allergy to Alpha Flight.
Like when it's around you.
Yeah. So, comic book wise, I ended up reading Battle Angel. That's probably what led me to manga, right? Because I picked up Battle Angel Alita when it was being published here. I picked up a Dominion when it was first being published here because they were weird and they were unique stories that I hadn't read before and I just couldn't get anywhere else. So, yeah, I like writing stories like that. I like writing what's not popular. I like writing something that feels original, and hopefully someday it will become popular because of its originality. It'll be a trendsetter than a trend follower. I mean, lots of people can, you know, make a better Superman. Lots of people can read the X-Men and go, well, if I made a team of superheroes, it would be better if I did it like this, with this intermix of tropey characters. You know, that's great. You're going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to do fine. Lots of people are going to do it. that's, especially if you're a good writer and you already have the opportunity there to create that type of thing, it's going to be successful, right? But that's not, I've never been interested in reading that nor creating it. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
So Robotech. I read a lot of Robotech because it was a war comic.
It's a good comic book. I have a bunch in my box. Yeah,
Harmony Gold stuff. It's you know, what's weird is that I was with I have to be really careful, but I was with William Morris before it became William Morris Endeavor, and sort of it was a Hip Pocket thing. And I was actually there and I had a meeting right around the same time that what's his name from Spider-Man was down working with the same people I was working with for a different thing. Trying to push for the Robotech movie, and that's when the whole licensing thing fell apart, which finally got cleared up what, 2 weeks ago, I think. So there's that.
Nah.
Yeah. Okay, I wandered off and talked about what I used to read. Yeah, I definitely read comic books that other people did not read as much as their primaries. People probably read them, but not as their primaries, and weren't as obsessed as I was with them.
Fair enough.
Yes, Battle Angel right. Alita Volume 3, the third storyline, the skate stuff, blew my mind as a kid.
Did you? Okay, so since you're talking about Battle Alita, what did you feel about the live action or the live action and digital animation version movie?
So
did you feel like it translated
well? Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, the problem with that movie, there's a huge issue with it. But I'll give you a little history. I've been following that since it first was the IP was first optioned by James Cameron, because I was already a huge fan by then. So I was super excited when it was in the news that James Cameron had optioned it. That was around the time he was doing Titanic, and then he made that series Dark Angel, and I was so disappointed that it wasn't actually Battle Angel. But I read later it's because they wouldn't allow the Dark Angel character to be a robot girl, apparently, or something. So that's why Dark Angel is Dark Angel and not like what James Cameron's original vision was or something. I don't know. I read that. Who knows? Could have been CBR. Gosh knows where those guys get information sometimes.
She was enhanced, but not fully tech.
Yeah, yeah. Integrated. So, and I feel like that was James Cameron's like maiden test, beta test of that concept. And so I watched that go on for years, hoping it would happen. Was always scared that they'd Americanize it too much and they'd do all these other things. Well, what happened in that 20-year period, that span, is that comic book series inspired other directors, other writers, other comic book creators, and a lot of the tropes from that are now tropes, right? Like, when I read it as a kid, some of the things that happened in that comic with her and her emotions and dealing with love and her past and, you know, the, if you will, the bewildered warrior, right? The bewildered warrior trope character, right? Wasn't quite as a big a thing when the first Battle Angel Alita came out. But after you have, you know, people like Joss Whedon use that in every single thing he ever produced and directed, right? And, you know, a whole bunch of other people who may be copying Joss doing that or maybe copying Alita or any of the other people copied it. By the time Alita comes out, it's kind of not... it's kind of like John Carter of Mars situation, you know. We're too familiar with the trope of the bewildered warrior with the weird past rising up against the fascist government led by an evil scientist thing, you know, who wiped her memory and her past because they had made a weapon that was too powerful, and she's escaped and is poor now, living with someone who's taking care of her and has no social skills or capabilities. And that trope's so rotten now because of things like Dollhouse, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, that whole group of stuff. I think Alita got damaged by that. Because they didn't fix some of the things that happened in the books, especially the first two books that I thought were, even back then, I thought they were a little bit too whiny to, right? And I think if they had altered that a little bit more, Alita could have done a little bit better as a female protagonist. If they updated her a tiny bit to get her away from what she had been and she has inspired for 20 years. Overall, though, I loved it. I thought they were very true as you could be to film, to that character. And cramming the first two books into one movie was actually quite fun.
Cool.
There you go.
Excellent. That's it's always interesting to hear someone that's a fan of the written word or the manga itself, the original, see how it translated, and then also to see if they're a fan of the product that came out. And I'm impressed with your answer.
Oh yeah, Yoho Manabe did Caravan Kid. That was also really good too. With the Breakers. Yeah.
Cool. All right, we're gonna jump back, and we're gonna find out how did you, Travis Webb, get in to the comics world?
Failure after failure, and I still feel like I'm failing all the time.
So you failed. You failed into it.
Yeah. Well, I'm still failing. Let's be honest, man. I haven't had a major IP. You know, Brett brings that up. And that's actually one of the reasons I wrote Starlight. Is Brett brought up that, you know, I keep ending up in all these situations with friends that are producers who have New York Times bestsellers, who I'm helping all the time, but I didn't have anything. And so, you know, Starlight ends up being self-published. It's cool as it is, and I love it to death. I'm not going to down talk my own comic series and you guys. And that we're doing a great job, and there's a good reason Starlight self-published. I think we've talked about it before, but we can bring it up later if you want. But I still don't have that, you know, publisher IP underneath me that like you and Brett and everyone else I know has, you know, and that's always going to hang over me until I get over that, you know, and that's on me, right? Because Starlight's doing great, mm-hmm. right? It's doing really huge for self-published. We're in that upper echelon, I think, of Kickstarter producers now and creators in that circle. But I failed a lot. Like, I wanted to be a comic book writer since forever. Like, I tried forever. When I was younger, I tried to figure out how to write comic book scripts by buying script pages at cons from other people. You remember you're talking about the old That's warehouse awesome. Comic book things? I would go and ask if anybody had script pages.
Yeah.
So I could figure out how to format.
Oh man.
So the format that I use that I showed you and others, that's a hybrid of me for years figuring out the best way to communicate to the artist what I need on the page. You know, and that's mm-hmm. it's from, you know, looking at so many different ways to write a comic book script. That feels to me like the one that communicates best. And so I was in high school and I would constantly try to write. I buy blue line paper. I tried to learn how to draw too, but I wanted to write. But as much as I wanted to write, I was afraid I would never find anybody who could draw except for my cousin Brian, who I thought was going to be the most famous comic book artist in history. And then he's not. And I always want to do stuff with him because of that. But I tried to learn how to draw for years. I took art classes, but I just wanted to write more than anything. The issue with my writing is, and I think you know this from working with me, is I have really bad ADD. I can't remember the sentence I'm working on in the middle of the sentence, and all of a sudden, sometimes I'll send stuff to an editor, and it's literally one sentence halfway through, and then another sentence just starting halfway into the sentence because I forgot I was writing the first sentence. Because in my head, I already said the sentence and never made it to paper.
Never seen that. Never seen that when we're working together ever.
Sure. So
as you've never seen,
it's a real problem. I've been medicated for it since third grade, and I struggle with the medications for it. So when I was in high school, I was writing comic books and making my own comics all through high school. I ended up being expelled my senior year of high school as ASB president and captain of the football team, and that was hard. Like, what a thing to get expelled at. And I ended up kind of like loosely being a couch surfer and working at a comic book shop. Shout out to Digital Heroes. And Karen, the wife of Jeff, who ran the shop, and Karen runs the shop too, let's be honest, kind of took me in and got me to go to college. And they don't teach like comic book writing classes. They teach, you know, writing classes and stuff. And the closest thing that mm-hmm. I felt comfortable with to comic book writing was journalism. So I started taking every journalism class I could. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough money to finish college at the time. So I just ended up becoming a journalist instead. And so I had to leave college, move. And then, side note on that, because I was working so hard on my little dinky zines and homemade comic books, that got me introduced to Richard Garfield and Walla Walla. About the same time, he was pitching his card game, and actually he was pitching his board game, Robo Rally, to Wizards of the Coast up in Portland or something like that. And I ended up becoming friends with a bunch of people who were friends with him. And as a teenager, I was invited to come and be a playtester for Magic the Gathering. And I was one of the original playtesters in Magic the Gathering. And I was a playtester for a long time after that because of my writing and because people knew who I was from my stupid little comics. I was basically trying to sell people all over Walla Walla as a kid. So, but it never went anywhere, right? Nobody knew how to teach me how to write comic books. And remember earlier I said, you have to get somewhere where you can create the opportunity to have opportunity. So,
yeah.
I got back to Seattle. I went to work for some newspapers up here. I did stringer work. Things got really bad. And September 11th happened while I was a journalist. And I got super depressed after that. I was also partying. I was really into going to raves every weekend, as many people know. And then I started trying to submit to Marvel every couple months. I would send, because the way the submission process, I don't know if it still works this way, but you had to download this like Marvel sample script, which I don't like the way Marvel scripts, but I learned it, you know, so I could do the sample script. And you would submit a script and you'd get a denial letter. Now, the cool thing is when you get a denial letter, it comes on this little Spider-Man envelope and it's handwritten. So your name and address are written by a blue ink pen. And you feel kind of special because you know somebody actually took the time to read your script. And they always gave really good feedback, you know. And then I would light the letter on fire and keep the envelope. That's a true story. I regret doing that now, right? At the time, I was in my early 20s, and I thought it hurt so much that it would leave a bigger impression. Their criticism would leave a bigger impression if I was forced to memorize it before I lit it on fire than if I kept it. That was my idea. That's a terrible idea. Don't do that.
Hmm.
Because I don't remember who the damn editor letters. Is that wrote me all my damn, denial letters back. And,
oh man. Yeah,
but I have my envelopes, but they don't say who the editor was that wrote me back. Right. But they were really, it was really good criticism. One of the things was, getting a plot done, a full arc in a single issue, you know, and that one came back several times. I was always writing at the time to have an arc through the series because I grew up on manga more, you know, and Robotech and stuff like that, where you didn't have every issue in my head. This is wrong, but in my head, the story was all the issues together. But really, there is a contained arc in every issue. And I didn't understand that when I was first starting out because I didn't have anyone to mentor me or show me that was what was happening. But because I kept getting that criticism back, mm-hmm. I started going back and trying to figure out what the hell am I doing wrong. And that's when I started getting really technical. Like, this happens around this point in the comic. This is how many pages in the comic. This is how a page turns. This is how front panels work. And I ended up meeting Scott McCloud at a convention. And I couldn't afford his book. He may not remember this. It was in Seattle, but he gave me his book as on a discount. I had a couple bucks from working at a comic book booth at the time for Digital Heroes, and I got his book, Understanding Comics, at that time, and that blew my mind, you know. And it just ended up being more and more rejection letters, and then I became a rave promoter on accident, and thought I was just going to throw a couple raves and then go back to trying to write comic books and being a journalist, but here's the thing. Writers don't make a lot of money, right? Unless you're a big writer, right? You're not going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You and I know writers who have major feature films based on their IP And there are people who have made millions of dollars off their IP. And these guys, we have to buy them dinner because they don't have money that week. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's how creativity works in capitalism. The creator is always broke, and somebody in business is rich off that creation. And it was hard to see that. And I was afraid that if I kept pushing this comic book thing, as much as I loved it and I've been trying for years, oh man, I forgot about some, I had some other deals that failed too, but anyways, it was never going to happen. And so I went to work for Xerox to be a manual writer, and I write manuals for a long time. But I started submitting again, and then some more bad things happened in Seattle with the rave scene, and that made me depressed. And then I would try to come back, and I would try to write comic books again. And then finally, I guess 10 years ago, a friend of mine in Hollywood was like, you know, you could just be stupid. And this is how he puts it. You could be stupid and do the thing they tell everyone not to do. I'm like, what's that? He goes, you could just send your idea for a comic book to every comic book agent in Hollywood. He's like, they tell you not to do it. You absolutely should not do this. You might ruin your career forever because everyone will hate you for doing this and will think you're a dumbass. But you got nothing to lose at this point. So I did that. let me tell you, that's a dumb idea.
And?
Probably don't do it. In fact, if you watch videos on how to become a writer in Hollywood, every last video will tell you not to do that. Every agent will tell you not to do that. Every agency will tell you, we will burn your shit if you send it to us. So I did it.
Yeah, unsolicited submissions are not a good way to go.
Oh my God, and you'll piss them off. I mean, they will hate you for it. And most of them don't reply. I found out what the routine is, and like, they don't even take it to anyone. It literally just gets burned in the mail. I don't know what happened, but somehow, so my when I sent these unsolicited pieces out, I put a logo on them and wrote "Normal people don't kill people" on the cover of the envelope, on the front of the envelope. I sent it to all these out. In hindsight, don't do that either. And I got a call from someone over at William Morris, and he's like, hey, do you want to talk about this comic? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you do this a lot. I'm like, yeah, I've been writing for years, and you know, I worked on this project and this other thing, and you know. And he's all like, well, why don't you come down and tell me your story? I'm like, all right, when do you want me down there? He's like, can you come down Thursday? I'm like, okay, sure, I can come down Thursday. So I tell my friend's like, you're full of shit. Because my friend works in Hollywood. He works for a big management outfit. He's like, there's no way that person called you. And I'm like, here's the info. He's like, oh my God, he did. And he's like, okay, you can come stay with me. You got to get down here by Thursday. You're going to have to fly. I'm like, man, I hate flying. I was in a bad plane landing one time, and I've been scared of flying ever since. I'm just going to drive down. He's like, oh, that's stupid, dude. Don't drive down. You have to leave today. I'm like, I'm leaving today. So I went and I rented a car, and I went to go drive down from Seattle to L.A. in 3 days to be there by Thursday. I get to Oregon where the mountain pass is, and there's a blizzard, and they have to turn us back. So then I have to sleep in my car and wait until they open the pass back then. But I didn't really sleep in my car. I just stressed out. And then I went over the pass, and it was the scariest drive of my life because I was driving a Prius over a mountain range that just got reopened from a blizzard. And I was behind a full day. So it was Wednesday, and I was still like way up Northern California, and I get to like Pasadena or something like that, and I buy a bunch of those $5 energy drinks because it's getting into the evening. I still got to get to LA tonight. So I start slamming $5 energy drinks to stay awake, and that causes me to start sweating in the car. So I took my shirt and wrapped it around my forehead to keep the sweat from running in my eyes, to try to stay awake because it's getting really late, like almost midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm pulling into freaking West Hollywood, Beverly Hills area, kind of area, to get to my friend's house. And I'm so tired, and I've been driving nonstop for almost 3 days now. I got to be at William Morris at 9 a.m. for my meeting, right? And I am freaking out, and I can't, my eyes are blurry, and I'm pulling down the streets, just trying to use the map on my phone. And no, it wasn't a map on my phone. It was a MapQuest printed map. And
oh, printed MapQuest.
I pull up this one street and I can't see the street sign when I stop. So I kind of angled the car and pulled forward a little bit to get the headlights and the street sign so I could look at the MapQuest and look at the sign. I'm like, okay, so I just got to keep going forward. So I cross the street and I get up to the next block. Cop lights everywhere. Right? I get pulled over.
Oh, I'm no.
Literally two blocks. I can probably see, I think I could see my friend's condo building at the end of the block on the left, you know, two blocks down. And I get pulled over and the cops walk up to me. And I've got a towel wrapped around my head. I'm in a t-shirt that's just drenched with sweat. I got sweat running down my face. I got food and trash all over the seats because I've been driving for 2 days. And my eyes are probably dilated and I'm shaking because I'm so tired. And he's like, you want to step out of the car? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get arrested. My first time in West Hollywood. So I get out of the car. And he says, what did you take tonight? I'm like, I didn't take anything. I just came straight through here from Seattle. I'm really tired. He's like, why are you wearing a t-shirt on your head? I'm like, I put it on there because it was sweat running my eyes. He goes, what did you take tonight? Tell us what drugs you took tonight. I'm like, I did not take any drugs. I'm very tired. And out of the corner of my eye, I see the other cop sitting the little $5 energy drinks on top of my car laughing. He realizes what's going on with the other cop does. And the other cop looks up and goes, are you serious? And he's like, why did you ride down from Seattle straight through like this? I'm like, I have an appointment at William Morris at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And he's like, oh, congratulations. Well, where are you going? And their attitude totally changed. Like, they were like, an appointment at William Morris. Well, congratulations. Well, Willis, I'm like, I think my friend's condo is just two blocks up, you know, on the left. And he's like, well, we'll drive with you down there and we'll make sure you get to your friend's place safely, okay? I'm like, thanks. He goes, well, welcome to Hollywood. I'm like, well, thank you. So we pull up. I get out of the car. They walk me up to my friend's house to make sure he opened the door. And my friend had to basically, they had to release custody of me to my friend. He's like, make sure he gets some sleep, washes his face tomorrow, maybe put some toner on his face because he's ghost light. And they're laughing at my friend. He's like, good luck at your meeting tomorrow. I'm like, sweet. So next morning, I get up. I'm dead tired. I'm slamming coffee. I go down to William Morris. I'm sitting there holding the XXX coffee cup, waiting in the lobby, nervous for a very long time. And then they call down. They're like, Travis, your appointment's next Thursday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I just stayed in Hollywood for a week at my friend's place. And then he ended up making what's called like a hip pocket client, and I still talk to him. He's still great. And he was really working hard. He was like, we're going to get you in. And that's how I ended up getting to San Diego and stuff for the first time, is him contacting people, introducing me to people. And he introduced me to Brett. Because of the project I was working on, we needed some art. I called someone else. They told me to call Brett. Then him, and he was like, make sure you work with Brett on the project. And Brett and I just became best friends after that because we liked working together. And right as everything was ready to go, like, I'm doing meetings down in Hollywood. I'm meeting with Disney. You know, we're talking about these big, huge movies that were coming out at the time. I met with, I met some really famous producers. I met one director's best friend who's in high school, who decided he had a movie to pitch to me. And I thought I was meeting with that director. And I had to sit there for an hour while he pitched his film to me, for me to write it for him. And that was my first experience on learning what a ghostwriter was. And I didn't know that was going to become a thing.
The reversal.
You know, at the time, I was like, yeah, man, just email me later or something. I'll help you out. Oh, that turned into the next 10 years of random people from Hollywood that I'd met or knew somebody I met in Hollywood asking if I could help them with their movie or their screenplay or their TV show Bible or something like that. That's how I got that reputation. Mm-hmm. And William Morris ended up getting eaten by Endeavor, and then I fell through the cracks with that. My agent left William Morris, and after that, it was another really famous agent. Every time there was a problem with the screenplay, he would have his people call me, and then they would send me a check. And that went on for a while, too. And that's super, super against union rules, and that got me a bad rep, too. So, there you go. That's the story of how I got into comic books, and then I met you.
And then you met me.
it was just weird. It was 10 years of, you know, not getting credits, constantly thinking, you know, if I help this person or this director or this person fix their screenplay or they fix their book or their novel, you know, they'll make sure something happens. And I guess in a way they kind of did. They just introduced me to the next person, and that was their trade out for me on top of giving me a little bit of money.
Yeah.
But without those credits, without those IPs, I wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And one day, Brett and I were doing
Okay. Yeah, no, yeah.
Oh, and Brett's like,
you guys were doing a con together.
He's like, you gotta stop ghostwriting and stuff. He's like, you gotta stop doctoring scripts, you gotta stop ghostwriting, you gotta stop all of it. And it was weird. That was also the same year I met some people from the WGA who were important in the WGA. And I won't say who they were. I still know who they are. They're very nice to me. And they said, yeah, we kind of know what's going on. And you're not the only one going through this. He goes, she's like, we're trying to stop that now. You need to tell us who's doing, you know, who these people are. I'm like, no, I'm not telling them. They're like, all right, well, then stop doing it because your career's not going to go anywhere until you stop. I was like, okay. And I stopped helping people. True story.
Sometimes you got to trade one thing to get something else to realize that the thing that you want is over here.
Yeah.
And now you're there.
Well, I, you
know, hey, you're over
I
here.
I finished Starlight. When I actually, you know, it took me a long time to develop the idea, but I wrote the actual, you know, I do this. So we'll tell the audience, when I sit down to actually write something, I can do it in a couple hours. I've knocked out entire screenplays, 120 pages, 90 pages in a weekend, you know, rough draft. It's just getting to that point where I can do that. With Starlight, the problem with that was I was too close to the script at this point. And I could feel the problems that other people had with their scripts. And I was freaking out because I didn't want to screw it up because Brett and I were doing this together. And Brett has a really good reputation. And I really wanted to have an IP finally with my name on it that was legitimately mine. And I didn't want to be bad. And I knew there was problems. And I was like, you know what? I like Greg a lot. And I called Brett first, and then I paced on it, and then I called Brett again, and then I paced on it, and I had a whole meltdown over the idea of calling someone for help. And then I called you, and I said, hey, there are problems with the script. I know they're there, but I can't find them. And you found all of them. You did great. And you found new ones.
It was just a weird, like I've had people tell me when they read Starlight that they can see where there's moments where it's definitely like you and I, like they know it's a Travis bit. Like they know, like we wrote, like, you know, like that you have written this story, right? Mm-hmm. And they know that there's this Travis line, like through line. And then they know that there's like this moment of this Greg moment. Mm-hmm. And then there's this moment of Greg and Travis together in various books, you know? So in the two that are out right now. So it's kind of interesting that people that know us and know how we write separately can see when we're writing together 100% and then know when we've written something separately.
We're so Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett reborn. Except Neil's alive.
but it is kind of neat though. I would say, like, in my previous writing experiences, like I've always been the I'm always on the plot side of stuff, and scripting out stuff is usually like, okay, cool, we'll script that out. And a lot of stuff with what you and I have done is I've been going back through with the scripting of everything out. Cause you had a very large piece with this, and it was, I think like a full graphic novel before you broke it down into issues. Mm-hmm. And going back and re-scripting it as issues was mostly,
by the way.
It's,
I mean, the audience should know,
and
you were the one who
and
broke
people,
it.
And it's crazy because that's not what I do. It's not my wheelhouse. So hopefully people are like, oh, this actually, for somebody that doesn't do this, I don't know. I feel like, and thankfully we have David there to keep that rhythm, because it's been good, because where I'm feeling like I'm a little loosey goosey on something, he can kind of tone it back up again. But it's definitely one of those things where I feel like, whew, I'm out of my element, but you put a lot of faith in me to really bring this back in. So, and I was, that phone call was, I could tell there was a lot of like you were, you wanted me to help out, but you also were like, okay, here's what I need.
That's the doctor part of me, right? Like, I knew where the problem, like, I'll give an example. Like, you might remember, I had a lot of problems with Roger. You know, mm-hmm. Roger is a very hard character to write. He's not a likable character. And he is naggy and kind of an asshole. But I knew I was making him too naggy. And I was like, I got to cut him back. But the problem is, I didn't know how to cut him back, I'll be honest. You know, like, part of me is like, I need this guy to really be hated. He's a really naggy guy. And you were like, no, we can cut him back. You're like, it only needs to happen here. And that was great. That's what I needed.
Yeah, because if we cut him back too much, then then why have him?
Yeah.
But he is important and integral to the story.
Yeah.
He's a necessary person on the ship.
Yeah, he's definitely a necessary part to move the story that we're telling forward. You know what I was thinking just now, though? You know what we should bring up?
What's that?
Instead of talking about ourselves for just a minute for the last part of the show, let's
okay.
Let's talk about how cool David has been. Because we don't
give David enough credit,
actually. And I think this is a good opportunity to talk about David.
Yeah.
Maybe the last 10 minutes.
We'll give a look. David time. Oh, yeah.
So, real quick, Greg, tell everyone who David is.
David Mayer was actually the intern for Junior Braves of the Apocalypse. He, it was one of those interesting things. I had gone and done a class discussion for his communications class. And a mutual friend of ours, Dan Shabbat, was teaching that class. And after the class was done, and I talked about comics and working in comics and, you know, a little bit of history of comics. And Dan and I talked about comic book history and use of character and other things like that, and narrative like we do on our show. We're there wrapping up everything, and all of a sudden there was a tap. And it was David, and he was like, "Hey, if you ever need an intern, I hope this isn't me being too bold, but I would be interested in that opportunity." And this goes with what you're saying about making those opportunities. He saw that there was a potential for an opportunity, and he made that moment. He saw a moment. And he put himself out there, and he's like, "Hey, I work in a comic book shop back home in Portland. I like comics. I would like to work in comics at some point. I'm not sure exactly if I want to write or if I want to edit, but I definitely like comic books. I know that, and I think it would be really cool to hang out with you and go to comic book conventions and learn your side of the industry and see what it is to go to tables or go to comic book conventions and work a table, talk to people and go through that whole process. And then, you know, figure out how we set up for the next thing. And then, you know, go into panels and other stuff like that." And I was like, "I'll think about it." And I thought about it, and it was one of those things where I asked myself, do I need an intern? Am I somebody that needs an intern? Because am I at a point in my career that I need an intern? Is that's like something that somebody who has an amazing career has an intern? I didn't feel like I had accomplished something like that needed that, but here's somebody that wants that opportunity. And I gave him a call, and I was like, "Hey, so tell me more about what it is that you really want out of this." And he told me that, you know, really he wanted to know the ropes, because if he wanted to get into comics, that he was going to need to know what this life was really like. And I said, "Okay, well, I got a comic book convention coming up, and I'm going to need help with setup, teardown, running the table. I got a panel and I'm going to need somebody to run the table while I'm gone and some other things. And I'm going to have to go and talk to my publisher and put an order in and some other stuff for books. So I probably want you there so that we can go through that whole motion so you can see how that works. And he was 100% invested in that. So he came with me to basically like everything for that first year. And you know, that he was my intern and coming to every convention that I went to and doing all those different things. And at a point I was like, we were talking about more and more what his aspirations in comics were and did he want to write stuff, because I was getting opportunities to work on anthologies and other stuff. So I would ask him if he wanted to submit to those anthologies. So I'd help him do the submission process and go through and come up, you know, do his pitches and stuff and write his pitches, or, you know, like I would proof his pitches out and stuff and help him with that process and talking to those folks. And then finally it got to a point where he came forward and he's like, actually, really what I want to do is I want to edit stuff. I really want to just like look at the process of editing, because that's really where I feel like I fit the best at. You know, I like to write, but I like to edit. I like to read through stuff and find the problems. I'm really technical on that kind of stuff. And there was another way to make an opportunity, because he came at the right moment again, where I was working on another anthology piece. I needed an editor to edit those things, and it worked out really good in that case. And then all of a sudden here, Starlight comes along, Travis and I are working on it, and you're like, you know what we need? An editor. And sure enough, you and I are at a convention, David's there, the three of us are all talking, and well, Travis, what did you say? Uh-oh, Travis is gone. He's disappeared on me.
Doc is working again. I don't remember what I said.
You said, this guy wants to edit comic books. We're making a comic book.
Yeah, I was like,
he should edit our comic book.
For free. For exposure.
Well, no, okay. Well, so we for exposure, David. All the exposure. We do. Yeah. I it was funny though, because that convention, the first time that he went out with you and I doing stuff, it was like you were, oh man, it was the best experience for me, because he got to see what working with someone else was like, because you and I are totally two different people at conventions.
Yeah.
So it was great. And he was like, what am I doing? What's going on?
Getting donuts. Here's some money.
Here's some money. We want sushi.
And we need donuts for us. And that table over there. Hey, does this table, you guys want some donuts? We're sending our intern to get some donuts. Yeah. Ice cream. You want to go get
He
ice
earned
cream?
That dinner that night.
Oh man. He is.
But in all honesty though, I mean, like he definitely, in all of the times that he was interning for us and doing stuff, for Braves and for the beginning of Starlight, when it came time to like, I think like when we're having that conversation afterwards, after I think we had already been working on book one and we'd gone through the whole entire process, and it was like, oh dude, we should have somebody look at this.
Yeah. You know, what I liked about David is he's not afraid not to talk, you know, and that's the thing, like having readers that won't tell you there's a problem, or having an editor that won't tell you there's a problem, is a problem in itself. You know, editors make good writers great. And David, you, the fact that he emailed you is a sign of the personality type that you need to have to be able to be an editor, you know, because he is literally an expert opinion more than anything. Did I lose you on that one?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's quick to he's quick to tell you when there's a moment that needs to be fixed in something, or if the dialogue is too. He's like going through book two and three, definitely in three. I like there was a lot of moments where dialogue. I felt like, oh, our dialogue is so good. This makes so much sense. He's like, guys, just trim it down. We can trim it down. We can go through and make these cuts. Here's my suggestions. You don't have to take them, but I think that why don't you read it this way and then read it that way?
No, he's been great.
And more often than not, he was so right.
The other thing is he's been really good about it is like he's honest when he said, I don't know how to fix it. But there's a problem right here, and you would read it to us, and then we'd fix it for him. Mm-hmm. But it's just him, the way he would explain, like, this is the issue. This is what's happening. I don't know how to fix it. What are you guys going to do about it kind of thing? I was like, remember, because we sat there like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what we have to do is have this person say this instead. Because it's not matching the panel. You know?
Well, I think, and you and I have worked with enough different people in various industries in comics or in film, TV, in prose or in journalism that have edited stuff for us. And a lot of times they go in and they feel like their job is to fix the thing or to put their creative touch on it. And not necessarily is that a sign of a good editor or necessarily their job. Their job is to make the suggestions or to do exactly what David did and say, I don't understand. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what's wrong with it, but it's wrong.
Yeah, definitely, there's definitely a problem.
So let's fix it.
The leader's going to have an issue. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people who think being editor means you have to fix it. And there's a difference, or you have to make changes. You don't have to, right? What you have to do is find us the best story that we can give you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's really the editor. Like, mm-hmm. find the best part of the story for us as writers. Find it for us, or find where the issues are and help us give our best.
Yeah. And make sure that it stands right then, and make sure that it's going to stand for the rest of the series, or even not just for the moment that we're putting it out, for the time that we want it to live, right? Because whatever you create, hopefully it's going to have a good shelf life. And I think that's one of the things that David's done a very good job in doing, is curating the moment and making sure that it has an extended shelf life. It's not just going to be good for when we put it out.
So
in,
okay.
2020, 2021.
I'm going to bring up the last thing I'm going to bring up about David before we close the show is, if you thought he was hard on us before, we just sent him to comic book editing school with Danny Fingeroth from Marvel.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited and also scared. Again, intimidation has come back again.
For listeners, if you're listening, not only do we pay David, we use money from the Starlight Kickstarter to put our editor through what we believe is the only course on comic book editing offered with Danny Fingeroth, who was the legendary editor at Marvel Comics for a very long time, specifically around Spider-Man. He's been at that for a couple, I guess he'll be at it for 2 weeks when he's done. And you haven't had a call with him, but I've had a call with him, and he already has ideas. We're dead. We're so dead.
So dead. Oh man. I'm excited. I can imagine that he's going to come back with a whole new set of tools in the toolbox, and he's going to bring us something there's going to be a different David in the editor's chair.
Yeah.
And issue number 4 is going to be little touch to it.
Yeah. Instead of being,
which is going to be
adorable,
good.
Adorable little David on the Zoom calls. He'll be like sitting at a desk holding a coffee cup now that says editor in chief, wearing more professional glasses, you know, a bow tie.
He's not going to be sitting there on his deck with his phone pointed at the sky.
No, he's going to have an office, man. He's going to have a desk and glasses and a bow tie and a coffee mug. And he's going to say things like,
oh, man.
So let me get this straight. You know?
That kind of sounded like him almost. Oh, wow. Oh.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap up because we've been talking
I know. Well, I was going to say, speaking of upcoming Starlight stuff, for any of the listeners that haven't keyed into our announcements for Starlight, the Kickstarter is coming up on May 4th. That would be quite soon. And we do have a couple of other announcements outside of the Kickstarter drop on May 4th. But if you haven't been following along, Travis, who is joining our team?
Guys, we have Tom. Oh, my God. I just practiced saying his name before the call. Orzechowski. Tom Orzechowski.
And if you're not
our letterer now. Who is the Guinness
book? If you're not familiar.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, if you're not familiar, Travis, what is he known for?
Well, he is one of the most famous letterers in comic book history. He lettered almost all of Chris Claremont's run on X-Men. And he holds the Guinness Book of World Records for longest running letterer on a single series, as he has been the letterer for Spawn this entire time.
So
when you go to school,
it's a big get.
Yeah. When you go to school to learn about comic books and stuff as an artist, and you start learning how lettering works and stuff, you actually study him, not from him. You study him as a letterer and his techniques and his past. And he's our actual letterer on our comic.
I want to say, like, the meeting that we had with Brett when we were discussing this, and you had proposed the idea of bringing someone new to the team to do lettering, and Brett was like, well, who would it be? And you said,
oh, Tom,
who would be coming on the team.
Yeah, nice way to dodge the name
there. And you,
Greg.
Yes, you said Tom's name. Brett's face on the phone call just went through all the emotions of a child on Christmas morning.
Yeah. It's like, God, I'd love to have him letter. I was so scared to ask him. Do you want to bring someone else on the team to do lettering? I was waiting for him to be like, and he was like, oh, who do you want to bring on? We're like, Tom Orzechowski. And he's all like, oh.
It was like the kid that gets the Nintendo 64 for Christmas in 1993.
Yeah, he was super excited about it. It was
1998, I guess.
98, yeah, because it was late. 5 years.
Yeah. No. Yeah, 98.
It wasn't even called an Ultra.
The Dolphin. Yeah, the Ultra. Awesome. But yeah, so we have Tom joining the team, and then also doing
Lee Moyer doing
additional art and cover. Yeah.
Who, side note, we should thank, if we have a chance real quick, Lee Moyer has been helping us with a lot of art stuff, telling us, you know, better ways to deliver our comic social media wise, and like, you know, looking at stuff, looking over stuff and problems that we're having, and just been a great advisor this whole time.
It just really feels like our team has, our small little Starlight family has grown so much.
Yeah. For such a tiny little comic, for a little Kickstarter comic, we've got some big people playing with us, and it's been really nice. We've been able to, we have those opportunities because of who we are. Like I said before, because we've created those opportunities over the years. So, yeah, I mean, we're both blessed, but it was a lot of work, as I think people would get from our stories, to get where we are, where we can do things like make a phone call and get someone like Tom to work with us as a teeny little Kickstarter.
And it's one of those things, too. Like, I mean, people will ask, and the question's been posed before, that, like, you know, how come it's you want to do it, you're doing it as a Kickstarter. And when it comes down to it, it's the idea of that sheer ownership feel, I think, really what it, you know, it's ours, it's our book, It's our little thing right now.
Our character can do drugs.
Eventually someday it might grow into a juggernaut that what?
Oh, I was just thinking about that.
What?
She can't do ecstasy.
What?
Like do any drug yeah. but ecstasy. What? That doesn't even make sense. Just make up a drug. No.
It doesn't. You can't have ravers in a comic book.
What?
You can't.
Maybe she could just be an alternate kid. Okay. Just don't say rave.
She'd just be a goth girl.
Yeah, she's.
But I mean, that's.
Yeah.
Some of the challenges that I think when you were posed early on when bringing this to other places, they just seem kind of just crazy, and we've gone out and done it ourselves, and we're making something that actually people are interested in. They want to see the story where you've got a rave kid that is going through the motions of trying to deal with being a child superhero and being a kid or a teenager and going through all that stuff. And it's an interesting story. It's something that needs to be told.
It's my favorite so far. All right, Greg, we should wrap
until
up
the
this
next
Gunslinger episode. It's getting late. We've been all so right. long. Hopefully you'll edit it all down.
Yeah, we've...
You know?
I'm going to not edit anything. I'm going to keep all of the things in.
If I was in like a car driving across
the octopus,
and we had as much dead air as you and I had just now, I would stab us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, especially if I was driving down for a William Morris, you know, like meeting, and I had a towel on my head or something. Oh, my God.
Travis, normal people don't kill people.
Such a dumb idea.
I don't know.
Oh, man. All right, man.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us on this very off-brand Narrative Gunslingers. This has been Greg.
This has been Travis, and we hope you learned something from our stupid stories.
You can always, if you fail, you can always fail upward, and it only takes three things. You only need two of them, but gosh darn it, having three of them is good.
Where are they, Greg?